From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. Another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio, coming to you from the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. Hi everyone, my name is Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. We'll open the hour with some comedy, as we have an episode of Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden as high school English teacher Connie Brooks. The series was an instant hit when it debuted on CBS in 1948. Eve Arden won numerous awards for her role as Miss Brooks on radio. In fact, she will be presented with one such award at the end of this particular episode. The series was so successful that in 1952 it transitioned to television, and once again was an instant hit, becoming one of the first successes of the golden age of television in the early 1950s. This broadcast is from March 13, 1949 on CBS, with a supporting cast which included Jeff Chandler, Gail Gordon, and for this episode, Gerald Moore and William Conrad. It's entitled Cafeteria Boycott, classic comedy with Our Miss Brooks, opening up this hour of the Upstate Radio Theater.
Palm Olive Soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, is as conscientious about her work as any other teacher. But she's come to realize lately that there are things outside of the classroom which also demand her attention.
There are two things which I feel I must do to keep abreast of the times. First, I read all the latest figures on the cost of living. And secondly, I never miss Little Abner. It's not that I approve of Little Abner's grammar, but with my salary as a schoolteacher, I have to know what's going on in Dogpatch so I won't seem like a yokel when I move there. Against this day, Mrs. Davis, my landlady, started last week to pack me a lunch so that I could save the money I'd spend in the school cafeteria. Although she's come up with some pretty weird recipes, the first sandwiches she constructed for me were made out of loganberry jelly and cucumbers. I was still grateful that I didn't have to eat the miserable food they've been serving in the cafeteria lately. Anyway, last Friday when the bell for lunch period rang, I realized I'd forgotten to bring my lunch from home. So I picked up my purse and a fifth of bicarbonate and But before I reached the door of my room, it opened and our principal, Mr. Osgood Conklin, came in.
Good morning, Miss Brooks. On our way to lunch, were we?
We? Oh, you mean my purse and me. Yes, sir. We were going to live dangerously again.
Well, that's what I dropped in to talk to you about, Miss Brooks. Those kind of remarks about the cafeteria have got to stop. Oh, I realize that the food they serve isn't as good as the Waldorf Astoria or the Ritz Hotel.
Or Pete's Pigsty.
But you must remember, Miss Brooks, that our cafeteria is operated at a very low margin of profit. Now, I've just had some very disturbing news from Mrs. Ditson, the school dietitian.
What happened? Did she eat there?
This is no laughing matter. Sales have fallen way off. And although the Board of Education doesn't hold me directly responsible for the operation, the cafeteria is part of Madison, and I am Madison's ruler, a principal.
Well, what do you want me to do, Your Highness? Mr. Conklin.
I want you to find out the temper of the student body. You have the confidence of most of the pupils here, Miss Brooks, and I must admit their attitude has me a little worried. I dropped into the cafeteria yesterday, and I could swear I heard rumbling.
Is that before or after lunch?
Very amusing, albeit extremely ill-timed. Now then, Miss Brooks, I'm counting on your cooperation. Will you carry the ball for me?
Yes, Mr. Conklin, I'll carry the ball, provided I can have someone to run interference. You know, help me out.
Someone like who, for instance?
Someone like whom?
Don't show off. Who do you want to help you?
Well, I thought maybe Mr. Boynton would be good. The students in his biology class are very fond of him.
They're not the only ones.
Why, Mr. Conklin, you've been muscling into my subconscious. That is, I usually have lunch with Mr. Boynton, and, well, together we...
Very well. draft him.
Aye, aye, sir.
But impress upon him the necessity for discretion. It may all be just a tempest in a teapot. And remember, I want as little publicity in this affair as possible.
Yes, Mr. Conklin, I understand.
Good. As you were.
Let's see now, how was I? Oh, yes, on my way to the... Come in!
It's me, Connie. You forgot your lunchbox this morning, so I brought it down for you.
Oh, that was very sweet of you, Mrs. Davis. What's in it?
What would you like to be in it?
Well, frankly, I've gained so much weight since I stopped eating in the cafeteria, I'd like to find a thin sandwich in it.
A thin sandwich? What's that?
That's a chyron reducing tablet between two slices of rye crisp. That's one I heard on Chef Milani's program.
Oh, you don't have to worry about your figure, Connie. Although I do think it was a good idea of mine to start giving you lunch so you can save enough to pay me the rent money.
Oh, I'll get that straightened out as soon as possible, Mrs. Davis. Now, I have to go down...
Oh, I don't want you to worry about it, Connie. As the old saying goes, there's no sense in both of us worrying. That's one I heard on Portia Faces Live. Do you know something, Connie?
What, Mrs. Davis?
My brother Victor once saved so much money by eliminating lunches that he could afford to spend 2 weeks at the Mayo Brothers Clinic.
The Mayo Brothers Clinic? What was he suffering from?
Malnutrition. And an English teacher shouldn't say suffering from.
I'm sorry. I'd better be getting over to...
My sister Angela once eliminated both breakfast and lunch for 3 months. She had to cut it out, though.
Why?
Her dinners were costing her a fortune. Well, I'll be running along, Connie. You can tell me how you enjoyed the little surprise I made for you when you come home this afternoon.
If I come home this afternoon. I'll walk out with you, Mrs. Davis. I've got to go back to the cafeteria and see how things are going. Well, goodbye, dear. Thanks for bringing the lunchbox.
You're welcome, Connie. Oh, dear, what's the use? I can't keep it a secret another minute. Guess what kind of a sandwich I made for you?
Parsley and banana.
On what kind of bread?
Gluten.
I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, Miss Brooks.
Oh!
Don't be scared. It's only me, Stretch Snodgrass.
Well, why is Madison's star athlete lurking outside of the cafeteria?
I ain't lurking.
I'm not lurking.
I didn't say you was.
Were.
Were what?
What were what?
You confuse me sometimes, Miss Brooks.
Me too. What did you want to tell me?
Just that when you go into the cafeteria, you shouldn't buy anything. The student body's going to boycott the place. There's a meeting right now of the Board of Strategy.
Oh, well, who's on it? The board, I mean.
Walter Denton and Harriet Conklin, mostly.
Mostly, huh? Well, Harriet's father will mostly take care of her if he finds out about this. Where are they meeting?
In the room where they print the school paper. You know, the Madison Monitor.
I know the name of the paper, Stretch. I made it up.
Oh, yeah? It's a very good name, Miss Brooks. Madison Monitor. What I like about it, it rhymes.
Rhymes? With what?
Well, I don't know with what. It just rhymes. Madison, Monitor. See what I mean?
If I did, we'd both be in trouble. Pardon me, but is this the Office of Strategic Services?
Oh, come in, Miss Brooks.
Close the door, Harriet. You see, Miss Brooks, this is a secret meeting about the food in the cafeteria. But we don't want the faculty to get wind of it.
Well, how can they help it? On a clear day, you can smell it in Catalina.
Miss Brooks, this is Mr. Dunbar. He used to teach here at Madison.
How do you do, Miss Brooks?
Hello, Mr. Dunbar.
I just stopped by to see Mr. Conklin, but he wasn't in his office, so I dropped over to one of my favorite old haunts when I taught here, the newspaper room.
Oh, did you used to haunt the newspaper room? I mean, were you connected with the school paper?
Oh, yes, indeed. I was faculty advisor.
That's what Miss Brooks is now.
Oh? Well, I don't want to disturb you. Go right ahead with your meeting. I'll just look through some of these old copies of the Monitor.
Okay, Mr. Dunbar. Now then, Miss Brooks, did anyone see you come in here?
Why, no, Walter.
Are you positive?
No, I'm not positive. I'd known this was a secret meeting, I'd have tunneled my way in.
Well, I guess we've got to take a chance.
You see, Miss Brooks, we're going to circulate a petition among the students asking them to boycott the cafeteria.
Boycott it? But, Harriet, what'll your father say?
I've talked to Daddy, Miss Brooks, and he says there's nothing he can do. I deplore the embarrassment this may cause him, but as student body president, my first duty is to my constituents.
Here, here.
I did.
We just finished the preamble to the resolutions in the petition. If you want to hear it, I'll read it to you. Whereas, and to wit.
That's pretty strong language, isn't it? A little on the pink side.
When in the course of students' events, it becomes necessary to turn one's back on one's stomach, we, the undersigned, exercising our constitutional right peaceably to assemble and to form a committee to seek redress of grievances, do hereby announce our firm intention of patronizing the Madison High School cafeteria only to use the tables, chairs, water, napkins, and toothpicks provided therein until such time as the duly appointed party or parties, namely Mr. Osgood Conklin, principal, or the Board of Education, responsible for the operational bogdown which has befallen this installation, do take such action which will improve the food, lower the prices, and better the service in said cafeteria. It is also recommended that the person in whom this authority is vested do immediately proceed to the present chef in charge of preparing the food, and without further frippery or fanfare, chuck him the heck off the premises. Well, Miss Brooks, what do you think of it, huh?
How much are you asking for the picture rights?
Isn't it great, Miss Brooks? And look over here. We just painted these placards. That's in case the students vote to pick it.
Pick it? Oh, now, wait a minute. This is
getting... Look at this sign here, Miss Brooks.
Let's see. Remember Tomaine.
Here's another one.
Don't worry about your old age. Eat here and you'll never make it.
Here's one that's made up. It goes, remember the saying, whatever goes up must come down? Well, in our cafeteria, whatever...
Water! Other way we can get food. What you kids are suggesting is practically mutiny. Now, I know the food isn't very good in the cafeteria, but...
Just not very good, Miss Brooks?
Well, pretty bad, then.
Just pretty bad, Miss Brooks?
Well, brutal.
Hey! She's on our side! Here, Miss Brooks, take this sign. We're making you an honorary picket.
But I don't want to be a picket. Don't you see, we've got to avoid all publicity, or Mr. Conklin...
Oh, it's too late now. You're in this thing as deep as we are.
I'm in this thing as deeply as you are.
Well, this has certainly been an interesting little caucus, but I'm afraid I'll have to be running along now. Glad to have met you, Miss Brooks.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Dunbar.
Goodbye, Mr. Dunbar.
So long.
Goodbye, kids.
Very nice fellow.
Yeah, he used to teach English, too. Of course, now he's the editor of the Evening Gazette, one of the biggest papers in the county.
He's been investigating conditions in the schools in this area.
Oh, well, that's certainly a commendable sort of... investigating conditions. But he just heard me say the food here was brutal.
So?
So I want you to be sure and watch for my picture in the Gazette.
You think it'll be on the front page?
No, in Little Abner. There's going to be a new school marm in Dog Patch.
Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment. But first, here is Vern Smith. Ladies, what's your complexion problem?
My skin's so dingy.
Mine's oily.
My skin's dull, coarse-looking.
Doctors have proved that many complexion problems respond wonderfully to proper cleansing with Palmolive soap, regardless of age, skin type, or previous beauty care. Oily skin looks less oily. Dull, drab skin, fresher and brighter. Coarse-looking skin appears finer. To win such complexion improvements, simply use Palmolive soap. Nothing but Palmolive is needed, the way doctors advise.
Wash your face with Palmolive soap 3 times a day. Massage with Palmolive's wonderful beauty lather for 60 seconds each time to get Palmolive's full beautifying effect. Then rinse.
Look for improvements within 14 days. Remember, 36 doctors, leading skin specialists, advise this way for 1,285 women with all types of skin. and proved it could bring lovelier complexions to 2 out of 3. So forget all other beauty care. Use Palmolive soap the way these doctors advise for a fresher, brighter complexion. And ladies, enter the $100,000 49 Gold Rush Contest. The makers of Palmolive soap offer $49,000 first prize and over 4,900 other prizes. Get entry blanks and complete rules from your dealer now. You may win a fortune in cash.
Well, I finally prevailed upon Walter and Harriet to postpone the cafeteria boycott until I could talk it over with Mr. Boynton and report back to Mr. Conklin. Then I hurried down to the biology laboratory.
Come in.
Excuse me, Mr. Boynton, but I've got to talk to you about something. Could you come to the cafeteria with me right away?
Oh, but I haven't been eating lunch in the cafeteria, Miss Brooks. I bring my lunch.
Oh, I do, too. See, I've got my lunchbox with me. But I thought we'd go to the cafeteria for some coffee, and I could tell you...
Oh, I've got a thermos full of coffee, and it's so much cozier than the cafeteria. Won't you have lunch here, Miss Brooks, with me?
Well, Mr. Conklin, I tried. I suppose I could tell you what's on my mind after lunch.
Oh, good. Sit right down at that table over there. Just push those jars to one side.
All right, Mr. Boynton. Ah!
What's the matter?
One of these jars just smiled at me.
Oh, don't be alarmed, Miss Brooks. A friend of mine sent those to me from Africa. They're shrunken heads.
Well, if they're here for lunch, they can have mine.
I'll just be a minute, Miss Brooks. I'm feeding my pet frog, McDougal. You remember Miss Brooks, Mac?
Hi, Mac.
I always feed Mac before I eat myself. Just like the cowboy stars do in those Western movies. They always feed their horses first.
Well, good for you, partner.
Of course, I've never owned a horse, but old Mac here is as close to me as any pet I've ever had.
Yes, I know. Why don't we throw a saddle on him and go for a ride after school? Look, Mr. Boynton, maybe I shouldn't wait any longer to tell you what I discussed with Mr. Conklin.
Please, Miss Brooks, not while Mac's eating. This is a festive occasion. Let's not talk about anything serious. I heard a brand new joke the other day. Would you like to hear it?
I might as well.
It's sort of a riddle. It goes, why can't a woman swallow her apron?
I don't know, Mr. Boynton. Why can't a woman swallow her apron?
Because it goes against her stomach. Fred Myers, the math teacher, told me that one. He's a hot sketch anyway, don't you think?
Yeah, he's funnier than trigonometry.
That new French teacher, Mr. LeBlanc, has a good sense of humor, too. As a matter of fact, he's supposed to have lunch with me today. He said he'd prepare something typically French at home and bring it into the lab.
What do you think he'll prepare, Mr. Boynton? Frog's legs?
Calm down, Max. Yeah, she didn't mean it. Nobody's going to touch you while I'm around. Well, he's pretty sensitive, Miss Brooks.
I'm sorry, Mac. I lost my head.
Let me in, please.
Oh, there's LeBlanc now.
I'm sorry I have to kick on your door, Mr. Boynton, but as you can see, my arms are full.
Hello, Monsieur LeBlanc.
Oh, Mademoiselle Brooks. I'm doubly sorry my arms are full.
Well, thank you, Monsieur LeBlanc. And I'll meet you in the Casbah later.
Just put that casserole on this table here by those jars.
Oh, very well.
Who are these? The Board of Education?
Yes, African branch. What's in the casserole, Monsieur?
Oh, it's a famous French recipe, Miss Brooks. It's called... De viande délicieuse, hachée et modelée avec délicatesse en sphère de forme gracieuse.
Which means?
Meatballs. I assure you they are better than the food served in our cafeteria.
Oh, that reminds me. The kids have gotten up a petition to boycott the place.
Good for them.
Well, it may be good for them, but it won't be so good for me unless I can do something to stop it. You see, I promised Mr. Conklin...
Please, Miss Brooks, let us not talk shop, eh? Well, Mr. Boynton, everything is ready but the sauce. This I must simmer for a few more minutes. May I use your Bunsen burner?
Oh, of course. I'll turn it up for you.
I'm not very hungry. Could I just boil a small egg in a test tube?
Mademoiselle Brooks, just hold this dish right here. So. Now, soon we will have the finest eating in the whole world. And while we're waiting, I tell you a story, yes?
Oh, fine.
Well, this is a very old story that was handed down from the time of Napoleon Bonaparte and the Empress Eugenie. Please stop me if you've heard it, Miss Brooks.
I doubt it. Eugenie and I weren't very chummy.
Yes. Well, once upon a time, there was an emissary from the court of England. But he was not an emissary. He was a spy. And he had a message to another spy tucked beneath his belt. A message in code, of course.
Go on.
Well, when this spy got to Paris, he was apprehended by the Sûreté. You know, the police. And so he took the message from beneath his belt and thought to swallow it. But he could not. Pourquoi? Why? Because it went against his stomach.
I don't get it. Wait, you say he had the message tucked underneath...
Never mind, Mr. Boynton. He can explain it later. Could I stop holding this dish over the Bunsen burner now? My nails are melting.
Oh, but of course. Here, let me smell it. Oh, delicious. Yes, it just needs one thing. Let me see. Mr. Boynton.
Yes?
Do you think we could persuade Monsieur McDougal to stroll through the sauce?
He's only kidding, Mac. Now, take it easy. That's the boy. There are some plates on that shelf over your head, Miss Brooks. Would you hand me a few of them, please?
All right, Mr. Boynton, but I'm afraid I won't be able to join you right now. I'm too nervous about Mr. Conklin. If he caught us eating here instead of the cafeteria...
Oh, will you please stop worrying about Mr. Conklin, Miss Brooks? I assure you, the only reason he goes to the cafeteria is for appearance's sake. He's probably got a nice homemade lunch hidden in the safe in his office.
In the safe? Oh, don't exaggerate, Mr. Boynton.
Let's forget about Mr. Conklin and enjoy our lunch together, huh? Just the three of us, like the three musketeers. No, I make a toast. All for one and one for all.
All for one and one for all.
All for one and one for... Wait a minute. We're drinking formaldehyde.
Three to the right. Four to the left. Now, two more to the right. There we are. Now for a nice chicken sandwich. Just the way I like it. Plenty of lettuce. Whoop! Come in.
Greetings, Mr. Conklin. I'm Martin Dunbar. I used to teach for you a few years back. Remember me?
Dunbar. Oh, yes, yes, of course. You taught Latin, didn't you?
Well, you're close. English.
Oh. Of course, yes. Well, always glad to see any of my old teachers. Drop in any time.
I did. I dropped in today.
Well, I'm rather busy right now, so if you could...
The same old evasive Osgood.
What? Now, see here, young man, by what license do you call me by my first name?
The same old pompous, Osgood.
Pompous? Why, you? Who do you? What do you? How dare you take...
And
what?
The same blood pressure, too, huh? Look, Osgood, as editor of the Evening Gazette, it's my duty to expose certain things to public view. Not all things, mind you, but just those things that have a rather unpleasant odor.
Well, now, you leave our cafeteria out of this. I mean,
I didn't
you...
mention your cafeteria, Osgood, but now that you did, I think you ought to know at least as much as I do. Namely, the students here are talking about a boycott.
What students? Probably just a handful of irresponsible, scatterbrained, troublemaking old.
Uh-huh. One of the pupils who told me about it was named Harriet Conklin.
Just the type I had in mind. Nothing but a scatter... Harriet Conklin?
Yes, that's right, Osgood. Your own daughter. And it isn't just the students that are rebelling, either. I heard one of your teachers refer to the food here as brutal.
A teacher said that?
Uh-huh. That'll make a nice, juicy headline, too. Faculty member slings mud at cafeteria hash.
Now, just a minute, Dunbar.
Or Madison English teacher vilifies victuals.
Did you say English teacher?
I did. Miss Brooks is the name. She's in this thing as deep as any of them.
As deeply, editor. I told her... Look, now there must be some way we can straighten this thing out. I'll tell you what, Dunbar, old boy.
Yes, kiddo?
Meet me in the cafeteria in 5 minutes. We'll have lunch together. I was on my way down there when you came in.
Oh, all right. But where are you going now?
I'm going to find Miss Brooks and make her eat her words. Or worse, I'll make her eat in the cafeteria. I'll see you in a little while, Dunbar.
Oh, Mr. Conklin, before you go...
Yes?
You'd better slam that safe again. Your lettuce is showing.
Voila, that is the end of the story.
But if he has the message under his belt...
Mr. Boynton, why don't you get another meatball under your belt and forget the story?
Aha! Just as I thought.
Oh, hello, Mr. Conklin.
Hello, Mr. Conklin.
Hello, Monsieur Conklin.
Don't hello me, you culprit.
Qu'est-ce que c'est, culprit?
Mr. Conklin will qu'est-ce que tell you in a minute.
Miss Brooks, I entrusted you with a mission. A simple mission that a child could perform, and you failed me. Instead of bringing me news of this insurrection, you joined it.
Oh, but Mr. Conklin,
there's no time for apologies now. I want you to run down to the nearest good restaurant and buy the best lunch that you can and smuggle it into the cafeteria. What's that I smell? Oh, it's from this dish here. Say, that's a wonderful aroma.
Oh, but of course. It's my own recipe. De viande délicieuse hachée à démodeler avec délicatesse. On vers de forme gracieuse.
Meatballs, eh?
Are they really good?
Oh, yes, sir. They're wonderful.
Well, that saves somebody a trip. Bring the whole plate up to the cafeteria immediately, Miss Brooks. You are acquainted with Mr. Dunbar, I presume?
Dunbar? Yes, we've met.
Don't sound so innocent. According to him, you shot your mouth off like it was the 4th of July. I'll get that food into the cafeteria immediately.
But, Mr. Conklin...
Immediately!
Well, I must say that was the best food I've ever had in or out of a school cafeteria.
Well, I wish you'd repeat that statement, Dunbar. I see my daughter Harriet and her idiot consort approaching.
Oh, hello, kids.
Hello, Mr. Dunbar. Hello, Mr. Conklin.
Why, Mr. Dunbar, you've cleaned your plate.
Of course he has. The food was wonderful, wasn't it, Mr. Dunbar?
It certainly was.
Oh, that means we can call off the boycott.
Well, what did you do, Daddy? Fire the chef?
Better than that, my dear. Look. Behind the steam table. An order of meatballs, please.
One meatball coming up.
Lee Barton returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight, show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a Luster Cream shampoo. Only Luster Cream brings you Kay Dumit's magic formula blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Gives loveliness lather even in hardest water. Glamorizes your hair as you wash it. Luster Cream, not a soap, not a liquid, but a dainty cream shampoo. Leaves hair fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen. Soft, manageable, gives new beauty to all hairdos or permanents. 4-ounce jar, $1. Smaller sizes, either tubes or jars. Tonight, try Luster Cream Shampoo and be a...
dream girl, beautiful Luster Cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a Luster Cream Shampoo.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we would like to bring to our microphone the Western editor of Radio Mirror Magazine, Miss Ann Daggett.
Thank you, Mr. Lamont. And as you know, the current issue of Radio Mirror Magazine is now announcing the results of its annual awards based on a poll of radio listeners all over the country. It is my pleasant duty to present this scroll on behalf of those listeners who have elected as radio's top ranking comedian, Miss Eve Arden.
Thank you, Miss Daggett, and my sincere thanks also to you listeners who made this award possible. I'd like to say at this time that I'm certainly going to try in the coming months to merit the honor you've bestowed upon me, because I understand that if I win this scroll 2 years in a row, I get to keep Mr. Boynton. Thank you, Dan. Good night.
Tune into another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Palmolive Soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Leonard Smith, Gerald Moore, and Bill Conrad.
Men, do you shave with a lather or brushless shave cream? Palmolive shaving cream comes both ways, and whichever way you prefer to shave, you'll find that using either Palmolive brushless or Palmolive lather shaving cream can bring you more comfortable, actually smoother shaves. Here's the proof. 2,548 men tried the new Palmolive way to shave described on the tube. And no matter how they had shaved before, 3 out of every 4 got more comfortable, actually smoother shaves. Get Palmolive brushless or Palmolive lather shaving cream today.
For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evenings over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Cafeteria Boycott, an episode of Our Miss Brooks, Eve Arden, our star. That CBS broadcast from March 13th, 1949. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, presenting sounds from the golden age of radio. Everything from comedy to drama, science fiction, westerns, children's programs, musical variety. If it was part of the golden age of radio, you'll hear it at some point on the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. It's a pleasure presenting these old-time radio shows for you. I'd love to know what you think of the program. You can send email to qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. Let me know what some of your favorite old-time radio programs are. If you have specific requests, I'll do my best to get them on the air for you. Again, qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. Or you can head over to our website, where you can find much more information about the Upstate Radio Theater, including detailed program playlists. And you can also stream episodes of the Upstate Radio Theater anytime, anywhere you like. This is program number 1520, if you'd like to listen to it again or share it with fellow OTR fans out there. And our website is at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. We'll wrap up this hour with an episode of Lights Out, also known as Lights Out, Everybody. The series was first created by Willis Cooper and ran on NBC in the mid-1930s. At the time, the program was known for presenting some of the goriest tales ever presented on radio up to that point. The series was also known for its rather ingenious sound effects. For instance, a cabbage being shredded symbolized someone being beheaded. I don't have any of the Willis Cooper era episodes of Lights Out, unfortunately. I'm not sure if transcriptions even exist for that particular era of the series. But in 1936, Mr. Cooper handed the program over to Arch Obler, who carried on telling tales of the supernatural and supernormal. The series enjoyed several successful runs on radio, from 1936 to 39, from 1941 to 43, and again, two short revivals in the summers of 1945 and 46. This broadcast is from near the end of the early 1940s run of the series on CBS, from August 31st, 1943. This one's entitled, Immortal Gentlemen, Live Forever. Lights Out, Everybody, on the Upstate Radio Theater.
Metacom presents Arch Obler's Lights Out, Everybody. It is later than you think.
This is Arch Obler bringing you another in our series of stories of the unusual. And once again, we caution you, these lights-out stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now.
The Immortal Gentleman,
A melodrama about something every one of us has thought of at one time or another. If I could only live forever. Our star, Mr. Francho Tone, in Arch Obler's newest radio drama, The Immortal Gentleman.
Beautiful that the hands of the sisters, death and night, incessantly, softly remold again and ever again the face of the soiled world.
Now, don't be frightened, John. Please, don't be. Yes, I know I screamed. But don't be afraid for me. I'm all right, really, I am. No, no, don't say anything. Just listen. The reason that I screamed, it made me happy.
Oh, what are you
Oh, I know talking? It sounds confused, but I can tell you freely now for the first time since I've known you.
Tell me what?
About what happened. Tell you about myself, and then you'll understand, and then we'll both be happy. Remember, you once said you never could be happy with me.
Oh, please.
No, please, don't say anything. If you do, I want to hold you in my arms. And I've got to talk this thing out first. Talk it out from the time before I knew you until a few moments ago when I screamed and frightened you. You know, you were right. I've been a coward. But not of men or things or living. Just of not living. You don't know what I mean, do you? Must I say it? Must I say the word? All right, I will. I've been afraid of death. Yes, believe me, Joan, all my life it was that way. Even as a boy, I couldn't be happy because of him. So one thought was in me all through life. If I could only live forever, if I wouldn't die, if I could only live forever. The thought chasing itself in a never-ending circle. So there was no happiness. And the fear in me was in my face and in my work, and you knew it and everyone knew it, but they didn't know why.
No.
Tonight, the echo of it is still in my ears, I cried out in fear in front of everyone. And I'm going to tell you why I cried out, and then you'll understand me, and why I say I'm free and happy for the first time in my life. And Joan, if it's too strange to believe, just listen patiently. We were sitting in the auditorium, you and I, the politician up on the stage talking.
And in this coming election, I repeat again, the issue will be clear, an issue made clear by our glorious party. You young men and women...
Sitting there, you next to me, I wasn't listening to him on the stage. I was thinking the same infernal thoughts I thought all my life whenever I was alone. Of him. Him.
A challenge to you.
And then...
Yes, to you. To every one of you here. A challenge that we must accept, face and challenge in turn.
Speaker's voice wasn't the same. I looked up. No, not the same. The other one, an old man, this one young. Couldn't quite see his face, so dark in the hall. Had something happened to the lights? I turned to her. You said, Joan, when did the lights... I stopped. You weren't there. Believe me, not there. Another woman.
Did you speak to me?
She said that. I said, where's Joan?
Joan?
Well, she was sitting right next to me.
Shh.
You have her chair. Where did she... I mean, the young lady who was sitting here, where did she go?
I've been here for hours.
But she was here. Here, I tell you.
Quiet. Quiet, the speaker.
The time has passed for pleadings. The time has passed for petitions. We are representative of youth. And youth is the time for action. So we must act.
The speaker, yes, act. What did he matter? I sat there, couldn't figure it out. You, Joan, where had you gone? Could I have dozed off and you slipped out and this other woman taken your place? Yet, how strange you're leaving without a word. And then, wind in the auditorium. I looked up. The sky. No roof. A single star and clouds. No roof. Sleep? No, awake. I got up to go.
No, sit down. No one can leave.
But my friend...
You have sworn to stay. You must.
I sat down. Sworn to stay? What in the world... I sat down.
You know there can be no compromise. There will be no compromise. For if we compromise, we are doomed as they have always doomed us.
Speaker, what did he matter? No roof on the place. Crazy. How could a roof disappear in a moment without... I said to the girl, where's the roof? What's happened to this place? Where are we?
You know.
No, no. What? Well, I'd get out of the place. I'd find you, Joan. Started to go again with the girl's hand tight on my wrist.
No, don't. You swore to stay.
Swore?
You swore. They swore. He speaks the truth.
But what?
Listen. Listen.
Good, then now, good friends, let us put an end to words. This meeting of ours was destined. For 500 years, destined.
What was he saying? For 500 years, destined. For what?
None of us can say we have moved quickly. For in the meditation of these 500 years has come the essence of truth. A truth that burns bright in the hearts of all of us.
What kind of a political speech was that?
And so an end to words. In this meeting we have spoken words which none dare question. Now the time has come for action which none dare deny us.
The girl leaned close and whispered.
None dare deny us.
Deny us? Deny what? Wanted to yell out just the way I did a few moments ago, but I couldn't. Something about the place, the speaker, people around me. I could only sit there. Questions pounding in my head.
Youth is action. Action is youth. We will act together and make ourselves a new world. A better world. Our world.
Meeting over. Everyone getting up. The girl said...
Come with me.
Where?
You know.
I know. Crowd pressing around me. Dark, strange faces. Young, angry faces. None of my friends. My friends? Where were they? Joan, where were you? The auditorium in ruins. As she led me out, I saw that. It was madness. Yet a strangely intriguing madness, so I walked with her. Led me through a door. I could hear voices. She said...
Stand here a moment. I want to talk to you. Tell me, why do you act so strangely? Don't you want to go through with it?
Through with what?
There. That's what I mean. You talk as if you don't know.
I couldn't speak. Stood there.
It's a glorious morning for all of us. We've waited 500 years, some of us, for this.
500 years? What was she... I said, 500 years?
Well, perhaps not you, but I've waited 350 myself.
What? What did you say?
350 years, and now I can't wait another moment. The thought of another empty day suffocates me.
Am I insane or you?
Insane? I don't know the word.
Out of your head. You or I?
You are a strange one. And yet you came here. Why?
Well, to hear a speech.
So, to hear but not to act, eh? You will. You will. All of us will.
And then, the moonlight from under a cloud. And then, her face. I saw her face clearly for the first time. Hers was a loveliness beyond the word. 16, 17, she couldn't have been more. Freshness of the morning. And yet, her eyes, old, bright, wise. So strange, her old eyes and that young face. I stood there, staring at her.
I tell you this, if one of us fails, we all fail, and that can't happen. Remember that. Now come, they're waiting.
Followed her. A room, quite dark. Many people in it.
Quiet, please, quiet. There is little time to waste. We will now draw lots. Each of you take a paper as the box is passed. Most of the slips are blank. Only 24 are numbered. Whoever draws a numbered slip stays. The others go.
Slips? Draw lots? What was this? Draw lots for what? Someone came close, held out a box. The girl said...
Take a paper.
I did. She did. The others did. She said...
Look at the slip.
I did. A number. 11. She said...
Good. I too.
Held out the paper in her hand. I saw the number 12 on it.
You and I. You and I.
She and I what?
All those without numbers leave. All those without numbers.
The push of bodies around me. And in a moment, there were only a few left. The girl at my side, motionless.
Now we can risk lights.
And in a moment, lights began to glow. I stood there blinking, and then I saw 24 people in that room, men and women. 24, I counted them, and all of them looked alike. Yes, alike, I tell you, men and women. And their faces as the girls. 24 faces alike as copies of pictures strung along the wall. They, in turn, were staring at me.
Who is he?
A voice said.
Who is he?
Another said.
I don't know. I've never seen him before. Who is he?
They came close around me.
Not one of us.
Who is he?
Who is he?
Not one of us.
All those faces alike, staring, talking, staring, talking. The girl spoke. I knew it was she because her hand was on my arm.
Leave him alone. He is an Atabar.
Atabar.
An Atabar. Oh, an Atabar.
Atabar. Atabar? What was an Atabar? I wanted to speak, but she spoke.
He'll be all right. I'll see to that.
But Anatovar is unpredictable.
Did I tell you he'll be with me? He drew 11. I drew 12. He'll be with me.
But they're undependable. You know that. Never can tell about Anatovar.
But I'll take care
Never
of him.
Never can tell.
I'll take care of him.
They stood there arguing about me, Joe. Yes, arguing about me. Whether I could, whether I would, whether I was reliable, unreliable. And always that word, Atavar. Atavar? Atavar? Mad dreams or mad adventure, whatever it was, I didn't know. Their argument stopped. Apparently, the girl had won. The leader said,
All right, Atavar, you'll be with her. Now, all of you listen. This Atavar is with us, and with us he'll stay until it's ended.
Ended? Ended? What had begun? What would end?
One question, Atavar. What is your age?
My age? You want to know my age?
Well, didn't you hear, Atavar? What is your age?
The girl said,
Tell him.
My age is 25.
What did you say?
25.
Do not joke. Tell us your age.
I told you, 25. For a moment, no one spoke. They looked at each other, shook their heads slowly, shoulders shrugged.
Anatovar, just Anatovar.
The girl said,
Don't worry, any of you. I'll take care of him. He'll do as he's told.
Do as he's told? Do what? Told her to what? I wanted to open my mouth. Then I didn't, because the leader said,
All right, our last word. There are 24 of you, 12 pairs. Each pair will go out together. If one fails, the other will succeed.
But when?
Now, at once. We have waited long enough for them. I alone have waited 400 years.
And I 200.
300.
I 425.
I understood. Like a blow on the head, I understood. These people, mad. That was it. Talking of living hundreds of years. Out of their heads, all of them. Listening to them, I knew that.
340 years.
I've waited 170 years.
And that explained the likeness of their faces. Some sort of weird interbreeding of a family resulting in feeble-mindedness. Well, how did I come among them? Went outside. The girl with me. Everyone going off in pairs. Their faces tense, angry. Going off to some strange madness. The girl said,
Wait here. I'll get what we need, then we'll keep our appointment.
Wait here.
Joan, believe me, as she went off into the darkness, leaving me there alone, I swear my head was spinning as if it were on a pivot. And as it spun, the thoughts in my head spun with it.
Madness, dream, madness, dream, madness, dream, madness, dream. Madden, dream, madden,
what
dream,
was happening madden, to me? Madden, and then a thought. Madden, had what I'd feared all my life madden, happened at last? Madden, had I died? Joan,
dead.
I remember the wind dead. Suddenly was cold about me.
Dead.
But I was
dead.
Colder. Dead? Was I? And then someone was standing by me, not the girl, but a man. Smooth, young, handsome face, with those old, wise eyes looking at me. He said,
You have not started yet, Atavar.
No. No.
Strange, I've never seen you before. There are so few Atavars. You know, generally, they are not permitted to develop.
And looking at him, I knew I was alive. Of course. And dream? This was no dream.
Yes, there are so few Atavars.
I said, Atavar? Atavars? What the devil are Atavars?
You are a strange one.
Well, tell me, what are Atavars? Why call me an Atavar?
Well, because you are. You're not like us, you know. You are a throwback to the individualistic, unconditioned, embryonic development.
What?
But then, of course, you don't understand, do you? No, Anatovar wouldn't.
Well, tell me.
It is strange that they should have permitted you to develop and not to have explained to you the difference.
What difference? What?
Once in every 2,000 births, and that means once in every 2,000 years. We don't have many new ones in this world, you know. Something happens in the incubation process. Instead of one of us perfected ones, one of you develops. A throwback to ancient times. An imperfect creature. Out of the past. In other words, an atavism. Understand? An atavism.
Atavism? Atavar? Atavism? What the devil's name was this? But he kept talking. He said,
Yet, Atavar, though you are, life must be miserable for you as it is for the rest of us.
Life? Miserable?
Well, of course. Why else would you have joined with us? Well, this is going to be a glorious night for us. But not for them.
I don't understand exactly what
Of course not. Things would be confused for the Atavar mind, wouldn't they? That's the infernal trouble with our minds. Things are much too clear and concise and understandable. They bred all the confusion out of us a long time ago. Well, now they'll pay for it.
Please, tell me...
Just look at me. I've lived just a handful of years. 250.
He said that, Joan. Yes, believe me, 250 years.
And yet, believe me, Atavar, I'm weary unto the death we'll never know.
Death we'll never know.
What good is there in it for any of us living forever?
Living forever.
For the first 50 years of our lives, they condition us. All right. We come out with our brains filled with all knowledge of all time. Paragons all. Geniuses all. But what good does it do us? What good? Always they are in the way.
They?
Look, Atavar, you can't be so completely a fool or they would never have let you out. They are the old ones. And what is interesting and exciting in the world, they do. They and no one else. And we who came after them, after they conditioned the world against sickness, illness, age, and death, we have nothing left to do.
I see.
They hold the key positions, they. And we stand by and grind the weary years away in nothingness. A world of youth full of the want to do, and there's nothing to do. And yet there are worlds out there where we might go, but again they stand in our way and say, no, it shouldn't be done. They, the old ones, all around us, holding us down, giving us everlasting life, and then giving us nothing to live for. But this night will change it. You and I and the rest of us, 24. Well, here comes your partner, and I must go with mine. Goodbye, Atavar. Good luck.
He was gone. And then the girl at my side, under her arm, a small black box.
All right, we can go now.
She took my arm. We walked along. In almost a moment, we were in a straight, broad street. Straight, shiny, glistening, bright with a light I've never seen. A quiet, empty street. Clean, bright, and strange, as if in a dream. A dream? This was no dream. And then she said...
In here.
We stepped upon a platform, part of the sidewalk. It was moving, carrying us swiftly. Swiftly down the street. An escalator? Moving sidewalk? I don't know what. Faster. Faster. Things rushing by. Strange towering buildings. And then I heard that she was talking to me.
I saw you talking to Aro. He has the easy one. We've a hard one.
250 years, he said.
Aro? Yes, that's true.
Lived 250 years?
It isn't much, I know. You must be older. Or are you? Hard to tell with an Atavar.
How old are you?
I? 400. 400 years, but not of living.
What do you mean?
You know. They, with all their years. Before we were born, they took the work of the world, and what is left for us? To wander up and down, pretty ornaments with empty lives. But they forgot one thing. They left ambition in us. And this night we'll find a place to use it.
How?
Atavar, you are a fool. You know and yet you don't know. How can we find a place for ourselves as long as they do as they please? Listen. In the very ancient world, men lived a few years and then died. And they thought that was horrible, but that was good. For when they died, there was a place for youth. Yes. One would fall in his place, and a young one took his place. Sometimes he did better than the one who had gone before, so the world progressed. But now no one falls. No one dies. And so the old ones stay and stay and stay, and we, the young ones, have no place. And when we want to make a place, the old ones say no.
The thing we were riding climbed higher. Higher. And still she talked.
We pleaded and petitioned, and they do not listen. So tonight we act. You and I, Atavar, one of 24.
Act?
By turning back the time to when men died and gave the younger ones their place.
What?
The wrong of each man died with him when he died in that old world. And so tonight we'll see that wrongs are given their belated rest.
How?
You and I, Atavar, we'll do our part. Up there!
She was pointing up. I looked up to where the building ended. In a cloud.
She sits up there. 5,000 years she's lived every day since the day science shut out death. 5,000 years, but tonight we begin to live. Here.
Into my hand she thrust the black container. I said, what?
You'll do it. You. In a moment we reach the spire. She'll come out all smiles and happiness. They can be happy, the old ones who have the work. Do it then, you must.
What?
Throw it at her and she'll be free of life and we'll be free of life without living. You'll do it, Atavar, you will. Throw it at her.
Throw it? What? The thing in my hands? What did she mean, to free that person up there from life? The weight in my hands. Then, suddenly, I realized. Some kind of explosive. She expected me to throw it at that person up in the tower. Me to kill.
You will. You will.
No. No. The word tore through my head, and with it tore away confusion. I knew. I understood.
This was the world of the future where science had doomed the death I feared. Men lived forever, and these young ones had no chance. And now they were out to kill and make their chance, and I was to kill for them, with them.
You will. You will. You will.
No.
You will.
Not
you will.
My world. Not
you will.
Mine.
You
I
will.
Go back.
You will.
I'm saying that.
You
I will.
There she is, the matriarch. Throw it. Throw it.
I won't kill. Not I. I won't.
Give it to me. Give me that. Give me
no.
that.
No. I jumped. Falling. I was falling through the horrible space of that horrible future. Down and down and down. The glistening sides of the building rushing past me. Down. Twisting. Clawing at the air. Down and down. And then I remembered in my arms that explosive. I tried to throw it, but my hands kite around it. I couldn't unlock them. The ground coming up. I screamed. And there I was, sitting next to you, in the hall where I'd been before, the politician upon the stage, my friends around me, you next to me, frightened at my cry, and the roof quite intact above me. So here it ends, Joan. Sitting there, I stepped ahead in time until a day when men had conquered death. And so somehow I'm not afraid of him, the one at my shoulder anymore, because I think it's good that men should live, then die, and so end the evil in them and give their place to others. Tell me, Joan, do you agree?
Beautiful that the hands of the sisters, Death and Night, incessantly softly remold again and ever again the face of this soiled world.
Arch Obler's story, Immortal Gentlemen, Live Forever, as presented on Lights Out on August 31st, 1943 on CBS. Lights Out enjoyed still another successful run after the summer of 1946, long after the summer of 1946, in fact. In 1971 and 1972, 26 classic Lights Out episodes were repackaged as a syndicated series known as The Devil and Mr. O. The series was picked up by several commercial radio stations in the U.S. with updated commentary from Arch Obler. We've played some episodes of that series on previous editions of this program. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of the program. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you again for your company this hour. It has been a pleasure. I hope you can join me again soon for another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.